because I hadn't been to confession in years, ever since I'd begun running around with him. That produced a great commotion among the young men. They laughed in spurts. Some of them covered their faces and giggled nervously. "I'm going to show you fellows something," Don Juan said casually after the young men had stopped laughing. My guess was that he was going to let us see some power objects he had in his pouch. For an instant, I thought the young men were going to cluster around him, for they made a sudden movement in unison. All of them bent forward a little bit, as if they were going to stand up. But then they all tucked their left legs in and went back to that mysterious position that was so hard on my knees. I tucked my left leg in as casually as possible. I found that if I didn't sit on my left foot, that is, if I kept a half-kneeling position, my knees didn't hurt as much. Don Juan stood up and walked around the big boulder until he was out of sight. He must have fed the fire before he stood up, while I was tucking in my leg, for the new sticks chirped as they ignited and long flames spurted out. The effect was extremely dramatic. The flames grew twice as big. Don Juan suddenly stepped out from behind the boulder and stood where he had been sitting. I had a moment of bewilderment. Don Juan had put on a funny black hat. It had peaks on the side, by the ears, and it was round on top. It occurred to me that it was actually a pirate's hat. He was wearing a long black coat with tails, fastened with a single shiny metallic button, and he had a peg leg. I laughed to myself. Don Juan really looked silly in his pirate's costume. I began to wonder where he had gotten that outfit out there in the wilderness. I assumed that it must have been hidden behind the rock. I commented to myself that all Don Juan needed was a patch over his eye and a parrot on his shoulder to be the perfect stereotype of a pirate. Don Juan looked at every member of the group, sweeping his eyes slowly from right to left. Then he looked up above us and stared into the darkness behind us. He remained in that position for a moment, and then he went around the boulder and disappeared. I didn't notice how he walked. Obviously, he must have had his knee bent in order to depict a man with a wooden leg. When he turned around to walk behind the boulder, I should have seen his bent leg, but I was so mystified by his acts that I didn't pay any attention to details. The flames lost their strength at the very moment Don Juan went around the boulder. I thought that his timing had been superb. He must have calculated how long it would take for the sticks he had added to the fire to burn, and had arranged his appearance and exit according to that calculation. The change in the intensity of the fire was very dramatic for the group. There was a ripple of nervousness among the young men. As the flames diminished in size, the young men went back in unison to a cross-legged sitting position. I expected Don Juan to step out from behind the boulder right away and sit down again, but he didn't. He remained out of sight. I waited impatiently. The young men were sitting with an impassive look on their faces. I couldn't understand what Don Juan had intended with all those histrionics. After a long wait, I turned to the young man on my right and asked him in a low voice if any of the items Don Juan had put on, the funny hat and the long tail coat and the fact he was standing on a peg leg, had any meaning to him. The young man looked at me with a funny, blank expression. He seemed confused. I repeated my question, and the other young man next to him looked at me attentively in order to listen. They looked at each other, seemingly in utter confusion. I said that, to me, the hat and the stump and the coat made him into a pirate. By then, all four men had come closer together around me. They giggled softly and fretted nervously. They seemed to be at a loss for words. The most daring of them finally spoke to me. He said that Don Juan didn't have a hat on, wasn't wearing a long coat, and was certainly not standing on a stump, but that he had a black cowl or shawl over his head and a jet black tunic, like a friar's, that went all the way to the ground. No, another young man exclaimed softly. He didn't have a cowl. That's right, the others said. The young man who had spoken first looked at me with an expression of total disbelief. I told them that we had to review what had happened very carefully and very quietly, and that I was sure Don Juan had wanted us to do so, and thus he had left us alone. The young man who was to my extreme right said that Don Juan was in rags. He had on a tattered poncho, or some sort of Indian coat, and a most beat-up sombrero. He was holding a basket with things in it, but he wasn't sure what those things were. He added that Don Juan wasn't really dressed as a beggar, but rather as a man who was coming back from an interminable journey, loaded with strange things. The young man, who had seen Don Juan with a black cowl, said that he had nothing in his hands, but that his hair was long and wild, as if he were a wild man that had just killed a friar and had put on his clothes, but couldn't hide his wildness. The young man to my left chuckled softly and commented on the weirdness of it all. He said that Don Juan was dressed as an important man who had just gotten off his horse. He had leather leggings for horseback riding, big spurs, a whip that he kept beating on his left palm, a chihuahua hat with a conical crown, and two 45 caliber automatic pistols. He said that Don Juan was the picture of a well-to-do ranchero. The young man to my extreme left laughed shyly and didn't volunteer to reveal what he had seen. I coaxed him, but the others didn't seem to be interested. He appeared to be rather too shy to talk. The fire was about to be extinguished when Don Juan came out from behind the boulder. "We better leave the young men to their doings," he said to me. "Bid them goodbye." He didn't look at them. He began to walk away slowly to give me time to say goodbye. The young men embraced me. There were no flames in the fire, but the live coals reflected enough glare. Don Juan was like a dark shadow a few feet away, and the young men were a circle of neatly defined static silhouettes. They were like a row of jet-black statues set in a background of darkness. It was at that point that the total event had an impact on me. A chill ran up my spine. I caught up with Don Juan. He told me, in a tone of great urgency, not to turn around to look at the young men, because at that moment they were a circle of shadows. My stomach felt a force coming from the outside. It was as if a hand had grabbed me. I screamed involuntarily. Don Juan whispered that there was so much power in that area that it would be very easy for me to use the gate of power. We jogged for hours. I fell down 5 times. Don Juan counted out loud every time I lost my balance. Then he came to a halt. "Sit down, huddle against the rocks, and cover your belly with your hands," he whispered in my ear. Sunday, April 15th, 1962. As soon as there was enough light in the morning, we started walking. Don Juan guided me to the place where I'd left my car. I was hungry, but I felt otherwise invigorated and well-rested. We ate some crackers and drank some bottled mineral water that I had in my car. I wanted to ask him some questions that were overwhelming me, but he put his finger to his lips. By mid-afternoon, we were in the border town where he wanted me to leave him. We went to a restaurant to eat lunch. The place was empty. We sat at a table by a window looking out at the busy main street and ordered our food. Don Juan seemed relaxed. His eyes shone with a mischievous glint. I felt encouraged and began a barrage of questions. I mainly wanted to know about his disguise. "I showed you a little bit of my not doing," he said, and his eyes seemed to glow. "But none of us saw the same disguise," I said. "How did you do that?" "It's all very simple," he replied. "They were only disguises, because everything we do is in some way merely a disguise. Everything we do, as I've told you, is a matter of doing. A man of knowledge could hook himself to everyone's doing and come up with weird things. But they're not weird, not really. They're weird only to those who are trapped in doing. Those four young men and yourself aren't aware yet of not doing, so it was easy to fool all of you. But how did you fool us? It won't make sense to you. There's no way for you to understand it. Try me, Don Juan, please. Let's say that when every one of us is born, we bring with us a little ring of power. That little ring is almost immediately put to use. So every one of us is already hooked from birth, and our rings of power are joined to everyone else's. In other words, our rings of power are hooked to the doing of the world in order to make the world. Give me an example so I could understand it, I said. For instance, our rings of power, yours and mine, are hooked right now to the doing in this room. We are making this room. Our rings of power are spinning this room into being at this very moment. Wait, I said. This room is here by itself. I'm not creating it. I have nothing to do with it. Don Juan didn't seem to be concerned with my argumentative protests. He very calmly maintained that the room we were in was brought to being and was kept in place because of the force of everybody's ring of power. You see, he continued, every one of us knows the doing of rooms because, in one way or another, we've spent much of our lives in rooms. A man of knowledge, on the other hand, develops another ring of power. I would call it the ring of not doing because it is hooked to not doing. With that ring, therefore, he can spin another world. A young waitress brought our food and seemed to be suspicious of us. Don Juan whispered that I should pay her to show her that I had enough money. I don't blame her for distrusting you, he said, and roared with laughter. You look like hell. I paid the woman and tipped her, and when she left us alone, I stared at Don Juan, trying to find a way to recapture the thread of our conversation. He came to my rescue. Your difficulty is that you haven't yet developed your extra ring of power, and your body doesn't know not doing, he said. I didn't understand what he'd said. My mind was locked in quite a prosaic concern. All I wanted to know was whether or not he had put on a pirate's outfit. Don Juan didn't answer, but laughed uproariously. I begged him to explain. But I've just explained it to you, he retorted. You mean that you didn't put on any disguise? I asked. All I did was to hook my ring of power to your own doing, he said. You yourself did the rest, and so did the others. That's incredible, I exclaimed. We all have been taught to agree about doing, he said softly. You don't have any idea of the power that that agreement brings with it. But fortunately, not doing is equally miraculous and powerful. I felt an uncontrollable ripple in my stomach. There was an unbridgeable abysm between my first-hand experience and his explanation. As an ultimate defense, I ended up, as I had always done, with a tinge of doubt and distrust, and with the question, what if Don Juan was really in cahoots with the young men, and he himself had set it all up? I changed the subject and asked him about the four apprentices. Did you tell me that they were shadows? I asked. That's right. Were they allies?